Yeah, Mickey Nui, and a very good morning to you, Auckland. It's 5 minutes past nine, and you're listening to 104.6 Planet FM and Keep Auckland Beautiful. My guest this morning is Sel Arbuckle from the Friends of Hmong Pho. Good morning, Sel, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, good day, Rick. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, it's great to see you. And actually, it's great to have somebody with your expertise. I have had guests before who have done bits and pieces for Friends of Hmong Pho, but you're right at the heart of it. And something you mentioned when we first spoke was about lava flow, scoria forest regeneration. And you're doing something unique there. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so Friends of Hmong Pho is a group of local people. About 15 years now we've been around, and founded by Kit Howden, who has expertise in parks management, and Sue Bulmer, an archaeologist who's written extensively about the par sites of the Auckland area. And the site is accessed from Batcher Road. It's the abandoned quarry just up from Mount Eden Village. In the 19th century, it was quarried away. There was a lawsuit that resulted in the land being handed to the council gratis. And since then, a sort of scoria scree slope has formed, mostly just scoria, not a lot of soil. Mount Eden, Hmong Pho itself, is coated with the volcanic ash that we call volcanic soil, but you don't get that on the quarried area. They strip that all away first thing. So we've been trying to replant native bush into this really inhospitable area of crumbling rock.
How's that going? I mean, what's willing to grow there? I mean, I understand that, you know, half of New Zealand is probably well suited to the volcanic soil.
Mm.
But what can you grow in that kind of scree?
Well, you get a guide from what grows on the lava flows, which, you know, the Mount Eden as a whole is a big thing. It runs from right at Newmarket across to towards Balmoral, and, you know, most of those lava flows are under housing, but there are areas of bush, and it's not quite the same as a scoria cone, let alone a quarry, but it gives you a clue to the type of trees that will survive in this very harsh, droughty environment. It's a low forest. It's...
By low, you mean low canopied?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't have kauri. It doesn't have any of those podocarp conifers that make the New Zealand bush so special. You know, if you've got the rallies out from Pommyland and you're taking them around Auckland to impress them with our magnificent rainforest.
Yeah. don't go there.
No. Stay right away. Ragged, scruffy and tatty is how you could describe it. And that's because plants are really struggling to survive.
Is this because the scree drains incredibly fast?
Yep.
Is that one thing?
Yep.
And it's not nutrient rich? I'm taking guesses
No. Look, the volcanic soil is terrific. It's not especially rich in nutrients, but it is very free draining. And anybody who has volcanic soil in their garden is very happy. The lava, the exposed lava and the scoria, we used to, I guess still do, use crushed scoria as a drainage material on playing fields and things like that.
That's right.
Dig a drain, fill it in with scoria. Very free draining, and the summer drought is a real crunch. It lasts a long time and it bites hard. But as I say, we've taken a guide from those lava flow forests, which are free draining for a different reason. There's no soil at the surface, and the lava, as it cools, cracks into blocks. So at the surface, you've just got this blocky mass, not so different from Rangitoto.
Yes, of course. That would be a very similar example, wouldn't it?
Well, what we have around the mountain is, if you think about walking up Rangitoto, and about two-thirds along, you hit the base of the scoria cone.
That's right.
It suddenly becomes steep. Just right there, there's a little depression between the gentler lava flows and the steep scoria cone. People call it the moat. The water drains down through the scoria cone and then hits the lava, so that little area is a bit moister than most of Rangitoto. So there, the Pohutukawa forest is developing an understory of Mahoe, Kawakawa, Kaprosma, all the things that you see on the mainland lava flow remnants, Mount Eden, 28,000 years old. So what you're seeing is what Rangitoto will become in time. And Rangitoto itself, the jewel in the crown of Auckland conservation. There are only a few other places in the world where you can observe, where there's a record of this succession of vegetation on a new island. One of them is in Iceland, another one in Indonesia. Yeah, so a very important place, and your reference point for what that succession is heading towards is what we see in places like Withiel Thomas Reserve, just behind Epsom Girls Grammar School.
Okay, so what's happening at the Batker Quarry is actually what started happening at Rangitoto after the last eruption at that moat area. So basically, you're actually starting over. You're starting very fresh.
Yeah.
Well, in geological time, extremely fresh. When did the quarry actually close?
I think 1879 was the lawsuit. You know, the quarry owner had transgressed into council land, and the council said, we won't sue you if you just give us the quarry. And seeing as he was finished with his quarrying...
That was it.
Yeah, so there you are.
So what was actually quarried there? What was he taking out of there, Backer and Co?
All of these scoria cones were chewed into. I think... You know, the Victorians believed in divine providence, and I think they thought that the Almighty had looked down and seen that the growing city of Auckland needed material for roads.
Needed aggregate.
Yeah, so he had placed there this wonderful, fragile material that you just hit it with a hammer and it crumbles into road metal.
Okay, and is this effectively where the Three Kings have gone?
Yeah, the one king.
Yeah, well, the one king that remains. The half a king that remains. But the first two kings are basically Auckland's roads.
As well as
that chunk of Mount Eden.
Railway ballast and drains and a very little bit of it got used as ornamental stone in places like the Central Police Station and the physics block at Auckland University.
That's right, yes.
The scoria isn't a really durable building stone. It's the lava bluestone that was prized for that. So there are plenty of quarries for that, like the one adjacent to Mount Eden Prison, grounds of Auckland Grammar School.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, they breaking rocks. That sorts people out. You know, they won't do that again.
No. Nobody wants to break rocks as punishment for whatever their crime happened to have been. Okay, so we had all this mining across Auckland, a lot of it ending up as aggregate to build the new city.
Yep.
Were there any historical treasures that were lost under the Batker mine? Because I know Maungafoe, Mount Eden, has lots of archaeological sites, for want of a better term. Waitapu, but was anything lost underneath the mine?
Well, there is a terrace that extends into the area damaged by quarrying, and, you know, I guess if this is the western side, it faces the afternoon sun in winter, you know, that's a place you'd probably want to live. So, yeah, a lot of the settlement faces towards the north, towards the arc of the sun, but there must have been terraces that disappeared in that. And now, you know, anything that remains of the Maori occupation is inviolate. So, and Heritage New Zealand has a very powerful mandate to protect that, including anything on private land. So a few years back when somebody was developing a property on Owens Road and they hit a shellfish midden on their property, things had to stop for a while archaeologists and Maori looked at that and decided what could be done.
Right.
Protection is good now.
Okay. Yes, good now.
Yeah.
Is the mine area safe and, I mean, secure in terms of, you know, this is not a place of potential landslide. This is a place for ecological restoration.
Yeah, well, there was planting of Pohutukawa in the 1950s. They felled pine trees that were all over the mountain and planted Pohutukawa, and that's stabilised. It's surface movement. It's not going to engulf Mount Eden Road, but it's a very loose area to climb around on, and we take it easy. The people who live on Mount Eden Road used to worry with the buses. They used to...
And the vibration.
Yeah, well, they used to worry that they were going to wake up one morning and find a bus in their backyard.
Come off the hill itself.
The buses have gone now, and that's been a lot of the campaign of the Friends of Mongafau over the years has been to get the cows and the cars off the mountain. And, you know, the cows were progressively retired from 2005 on, and now we're moving towards a vehicle-free upper area
on
the mountain.
By December this year, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because now there's the Maunga Trust or whatever it is that does the 12 or 13 cones across Auckland.
The Maunga Authority, and that's half and half representation of Maori and council, and Maori drawn from Tamaki Collective, a number of iwi.
Various iwi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ngāti Whātua were dominant, I think, but there are definitely other iwi who had parasites here. Yep.
Okay. And so with the vehicles departing, so the buses are gone already and cars gone by Christmas this year, what does that mean for the mountain? They're not going to close the roads?
What will happen is they're going to have those neat retractable bollards that you see outside Downing Street.
Right.
And people who are not so mobile will be given a code to operate these bollards. So people with mobility issues will still be able to drive to the summit.
You answered my next question. Because for the last year and a half, a friend of mine and I, who's a cancer patient, chemo patient, have been driving up to the top post-chemo to have an ice cream or fish and chips or whatever just to chill after a bad day at Auckland Hospital.
Yeah.
And now she's all better now, but it occurred to me that, oh, that was such a lovely thing to be able to do. So to some extent, I suppose if you have a mobility card, you might be able to gain access to the summit.
Yeah. No, these things have been thought through, and when you see, you know, a 94-year-old bloke on the TV news who says that he's always driven to the summit and he was in the war and he's paid his taxes and he's damned if he's going to stop, he won't have to stop.
He won't have to stop. Excellent. Oh, that's great. And what about, I know there was a service at one point where you basically parked at the bottom and a bus would run you up to the top.
That's it. They started out with the idea that there would be a sort of oversized electric dune buggy, but the batteries couldn't really cope with the demands of the climb.
The slope of the hill and whatnot. Yeah.
So they have a diesel van now, which is operated by the Tamaki Collective. There are guides on the mountain who will talk to you about the Maori history and take you to the top.
Okay, well, let's get back to your group, because how long have you've been planting there? I mean, how are you learning to do what you're doing? Is some of it trial and error? This is the restoration of the...
Yeah. We don't call it trial and error, Rick. We call it adaptive management.
Right. Okay, thank you. That'll be the official bureaucratic term.
So as you're going forward, you just suck it and see. What you planted last year that thrives, you plant more of, and what didn't, you don't. And it's working. There's... The aim in ecological restoration is always canopy closure. Once those trees get up to a size where their canopies meet, you get a whole lot less weed growth underneath.
That was my next question. I imagine you've got invasive weed issues, just given that if you have open ground, what we call weeds, but what nature calls succession,
yes,
moves in. With a vengeance. What are you wrestling with up there?
The site at the beginning was like any neglected area around Auckland. It had a whole lot of privet and the other kind of privet and blue morning glory over everything, jasmine, ivy. So these kind of strangling climbers and these trees that are capable of choking out native trees.
All the English favourite garden varieties.
Well,
morning glory, jasmine, ivy. Yeah, sounds good.
Well, yeah, you know, we talk about that, and the strange thing is that it's I think it's actually Irish ivy, and it's Japanese honeysuckle, and there's Himalayan honeysuckle as well, and it makes us sound like a very unpleasant group of people, really. Auckland is in the running for weediest city in the world. Honolulu is our main rival.
Okay.
So it's an uphill push. What volunteers can do that's different from the council's contractors is we can be a lot more selective. Most of what we do is hand weeding. So it often works well that the council might go in and spray out a big patch of honeysuckle, but when it comes to maintaining plantings, that's something that isn't economic for a contractor to do. Hand weeding is just really out.
Well, it's time consuming.
Yeah.
And it's much easier to go in with a chemical napalm and do a large area.
I love the smell of glyphosate in the morning. It's a matter of, you know, that council funding, you know, parks have to compete with everything else.
Yes.
And if it comes to a choice between, you know, replanting native trees on a site and fixing the roof of the Aotea car park before it falls on people, guess what?
The choice is clear. Choice is clear. If people wanted to get involved with what you're doing, how would they go about doing it?
Well, there are two things they do. I'm glad you asked. That's exactly the question I was hoping for, Rick.
Oh, that's what the show is. That's what the show is all about. How do people get involved?
Sure. There is a website, which is mongafowl.co, and the alternative is just to turn up in physical person, 9:30 on a Tuesday morning at Batcher Road. You'll see a little cluster of people in bush shirts and sensible shoes right at the top of Batcher, which is just a little cul-de-sac off Mount Eden Road. And I don't know, we get a bit of work done. We usually stand around and talk a bit until it warms up and then get a bit of work done, knock off for Smoko at 11. It's a nice matey group of people.
I was going to say, it sounds very social. Doesn't sound like backbreaking labor.
We worry about that sometimes. and there's usually good home baking for Smoko. And I just think good company. And, you know, if you have a group of people who are working cooperatively in something that they believe in to make the world a slightly better place and to make their neighbourhood a more pleasant place for people to walk the dog or whatever, you know, that's about as good as it gets, isn't it?
I would not disagree with that statement at all. At all. And the level of fitness, just a basic level of fitness and an ability to cope with the steep slopes?
Oh, look, one of us is 80 years old and mildly arthritic and has to move around a little bit more carefully than some people. At the other end of the scale, we have a bunch of wonderful kids from Auckland Grammar School, the senior school who... There's a headmaster's conservation committee or something at the school, and these guys come along and pitch in once a month. So it's a range of people, and as long as you can, pretty much as long as you can walk, right. You can do it.
Okay, so you, basic mobility, and you're in like Flint, you can help out. As you say, sensible shoes, bush clothes.
Yeah.
And a willingness to get your hands in, not necessarily into the soil, but into the stone, I guess.
Yeah, not a lot of soil. That's what we're beginning to do. We've become more attuned to, less ruthless about putting trees in and letting them fight it out. Spending, over the years, we're spending more time in preparing a planting hole and, you know, putting a bit of planting mix into that to give these trees a fighting chance. Yeah.
What is the longer term succession process? How does soil form in these conditions?
Oh, you know, even the weeds that were on the site, you know, they grew and died and rotted down, and there is that humus in spaces within the rocks, some places more than others. And if you look at Rangitoto, and people say the same thing about the lava flow forests on the mainland, that it's just astonishing that anything can grow when there's no visible soil. But over the centuries, that humus accumulates, and I guess that you look forward to getting a more diverse forest with little ferns and things at the ground level. Yeah,
right. As you say, once you get canopy closure, there's another whole iteration in nature. Are you composting the weeds that you pull out and putting those first dregs of soil back onto the same property?
Yeah. One of the worst weeds that we have in Auckland that forms a carpet over the ground and prevents any regeneration of native trees is Tradescantia, which in the Dark Ages was known as Wandering Jew.
Yes.
And so Tradescantia trad bags are big plastic woven fabric bags, wool sack type bags,
bags that Weed Free Trust sells.
Yes, those are the ones.
Those are the ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. No,
yeah.
I've had Weed Free Trust through.
Oh,
which
yes.
Is why I know about
yeah,
them.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
No, they're good guys.
And so those big black bags, you would fill them full of whatever weed you pull, including
the trad,
the bag. Trad, as you call it. Okay. Now, being a Yank, I still call it Wandering Jew. As you say, it's an old world name that's probably not...
Well, you know, people are sensitive. And
rightfully so.
I just can't imagine historically why Jewish people would be sensitive. Can you?
Oh, no, no. And there's no sarcasm in that question
no,
at all.
No
irony. But
no. So Tradescantia.
Tradescantia.
John Tradescant was the gardener to Charles I of England. So he was a good guy just when America was a new country and they were bringing all of these things back to British greenhouses, and he was honoured by this name. So trad bags, you pile the stuff in, leave it for a couple of years, the bag is completely impervious to light, And
the water goes through it, so the rain goes through it, and it all composts in there. It gets hot in the sun.
Yep.
Does all the right things.
And at the end of a couple of years, you've got, because there's no fiber in Tradescantia, it rots down into this lovely, dark, crumbly stuff that is a bit like chocolate cake mix.
Really?
And you don't know whether to eat it or put it on your garden. And, you know, man, it's just what you need on a site that is basically rock. So, you know, persistence, you know, over time.
So you're accelerating a natural process by, A, doing the weeding, composting the weeding, which is actually speeding up what would happen naturally where you would have weeds there for 200 years before things broke through.
Yeah.
So it's just an acceleration of a natural regeneration process.
Yeah. You could wait, and it would probably happen, but in the scale of human lifetimes, we're all impatient, and, you know, exotic trees like privet come in as well. So there are bush reserves around Auckland, like Jagger's Bush at the back of the zoo, that are pretty much pure privet. You can't say for certain that you're going to get a result if you just leave it to nature. So,
right, and it was human intervention. It was the quarry, after all, that came in and destroyed the what was there originally.
And the big picture around the country is that there are hundreds of these groups, and you know, these forests, lava flow forest and scoria cone forest, are nationally scarce. So what we're doing is not just something for our local community. This is a type of forest that, apart from Rangitoto, has almost ceased to exist. Same way as Riccarton Bush in Christchurch, which is one of the very few remnants of the mixed Matai forest that once covered the Canterbury Plains.
Right, the last vestige. It needs to be protected.
Yeah, so even though you're in a city, you're doing something for national conservation, and when you switch on the TV and you see somebody huddled in a pup tent beside a kakapo nest, you know, a volunteer in the recovery program, you think, yeah, you know, I'm part of that. And, you know, many of us in these groups are older people, semi-retired. We're the generation of 1968. And if you ask yourself, you know, like around Auckland, 1968, Tim Shadbolt was probably building bombs in basements and the revolution was just around the corner.
That's right.
So what happened to all that energy? Well, this is it. This is the revolution. There have been all kinds of changes in New Zealand society, but one very quiet one is you've got all these people of the 1968 generation who are around the country putting their little bit of the country back the way it was.
And I'll just add a comment to that. It's a revolution in the soil. And it's interesting to me that there is a revolution in the soil all around the world, and it's very quiet. Nobody's talking about it, but even climate change is going to be solved in the soil, many are saying. It's the only place we can put the carbon that we've put into the air, that sort of thing.
Yep.
But we're running out of time, so I don't want to go down that particular rabbit hole, because that's another whole rabbit hole, but I do want to repeat. So it's mongafo.co.nz.
Yep.
If you want to volunteer, and you said Tuesday mornings on Backer Place?
Yeah, 9.30 in the morning.
9.30 a.m., that was the question. Of course, you just got to dress sensibly for a bit of outdoor weeding.
Yep.
And
and you'll find that we're a welcoming group of people, and no one is cracking the whip.
It's about fun and fellowship and a bit of a bit of gardening.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, it's been a pleasure, Rick.
Kia ora. Listening.
If you've missed anything in today's program, don't forget, you can listen again online at any time. PlanetAudio.com.